one of the areas where we decided, just because of where we were and trying to get different perspective, et cetera, was in the area of coach. And we brought in the best coach possible. I think the best coach in the NBA, frankly, and certainly the best coach for the Clippers at this stage of the game, Holmes. So I'm excited about where we are.
Oh, Steve Ballmer, welcome to The Jump. I'm George Sedano in for our fearless leader, Rachel Nichols. Today, I'm joined by our 2008 NBA champ and NBA analyst, Kendrick Perkins, and of course, our NBA insider, New York Times bestseller, Brian Windhorst. You just heard Steve Ballmer call his new coach, Ty Lue, the best in the NBA. And coming up, on the day the Clippers officially introduced Lue, what is the biggest obstacle he faces as their head coach? We'll discuss all that in a bit. But first, breaking news here on The Jump. According to our agent Wojnarowski and Andrew Lopez, the Pelicans have hired Stan Van Gundy to be their next head coach. Van Gundy has coached 11-plus seasons with the Heat, Magic, and Pistons, and now faces the task of coaching Zion Williamson down in New Orleans. So, Perk, what's your reaction to this hire?
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of Stan Van Gundy. Do I love the hire? No, but I do like the hire. And here's why. I believe that Stan Van Gundy is a true definition of culture. And that's what these young guys need. I watched what Stan did for Dwight Howard when he first got to the Orlando Magic. Dwight Howard had some of his best years. He was a guy that was a public icon figure at the time. And this is the same situation with Zion Williamson. I think that Stan will be the best, would do right by him, put him in position to be successful. Will the Pelicans contend for a title? I don't believe so. But I do believe that this is a nice starting point to develop culture and foundation.
George, this is such an important hire. With where Zion Williamson is and this organization is, they really needed an experienced, steadying hand. David Griffin really wanted to hire Ty Lue, but Ty Lue was in demand, and when the Clippers job came open, he just wasn't going to leave that opportunity to go to New Orleans. Right after that was Stan Van Gundy, and to be honest with you, after Stan, it was a lot of guys who would be first-time head coaches. So David Griffin had to execute this hire. From what I am told, he actually offered him the job over the weekend, and it took several days of negotiating not only the contract, but how everything would work with his staff to get Stan comfortable with taking it. And J.J. Redick, I have been told, played a big role here. J.J. played for him in New Orleans, was a big part of the background and recruiting process. And so I don't know if it's going to work out, but I know that Stan Van Gundy is an excellent coach, and I suspect the Pelicans will get better with this hire.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Stan, as everyone is here, certainly. And Brian, I want to get to the Zion stuff specifically in a second. But, Perk, you said you liked it but didn't love it. Is there a specific reason why you don't necessarily love it?
Well, here's why. I thought that they were going to go younger. I thought a former player in that position, especially with that young nucleus that they have, Zion Williamson, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball, I thought that they needed to bring a guy in there that was going to be able to have a great positive impact on Lonzo Ball. I thought a guy like maybe Mark Jackson, a guy like Jay Kidd that played the point guard position. If you look at what Mark Jackson did for the foundation and the culture and what he did for Steph Curry, he took the Golden State Warriors from being irrelevant to being relevant, and then Steve Kerr came on in. If you look at what Jay Kidd did for Giannis in Milwaukee when he got there, he helped Giannis' game tremendously. And I thought that those two guys could have a real positive impact on Lonzo Ball, and that will take the Pelicans to new heights.
And Brian, you know, Perk, I don't think you're wrong in saying – I don't think Perk is wrong in saying that. I just think that, Perk, there's just no room for gambling here. And Mark Jackson and Jason Kidd's resumes are a little shaky compared to Stan Van Gundy's. And so, it may not end up working out, but this was the safest bet that they could make on a guy who they feel can get this turned in the right direction. Because to be honest with you, with a young player, even going into his second year, it gets late fast. This hire was so valuable, so important.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brian, in that regard. And I'm not trying to disparage Mark or Jason Kidd. I do think both guys deserve another opportunity. I don't think there's any question about that. But you know what you've got in Stan Van Gundy, and a guy who brings defense to the table. 8 out of his 10 seasons that he's coached previously, they've been a top defensive team, and we'll get into that aspect of it in a little bit too. And again, he's coached to an NBA Finals before on an NBA Finals team in the Eastern Conference with Dwight Howard. But Brian, the Zion part of it, as you kind of alluded to, is so important. How much did that factor into this specific equation? And what do you expect from this particular relationship?
Well, you know, Stan Van Gundy is not a guy who plays favorites or panders to players. He's a guy who is not afraid to get into his players' faces, not afraid to have friction. This is not going to be a relationship to make Zion Williamson comfortable and happy. It's going to be a relationship made to push Zion. And one of the things that needs to happen is Zion needs to bond with the organization. I'm not so sure how well it happened in the first year there. There's a little bit of a distance there. And I don't know if Stan's the perfect choice, but Stan definitely will elevate their level of play. And it's probably the type of disciplinarian that Zion could use.
Perk, let me
Brian, that goes back to my point that this is, right. I don't strongly believe it, that's what Zion need at this point of time in his career. He don't need a guy that's going to jump into his face. He need a guy that's going to be able to guide him on and off the court. And that's why I said a player coach, a guy that played in the league, will be the best fit for Zion so he could show him the ropes, not only on the court, but off the court. Accountability is one thing. X's and O's are another thing. But being able to relate, that's a whole different thing. This is not back in the day. This is a new era. This is a new generation of players, and you have to find ways to relate to get the best out of them so that, one, they could trust you, two, that they're going to go to war for you, and three, that they know that you have their best interests in heart.
But, Perk, let me ask you this. How do you establish that culture and also, you know, try to relate? Like, I think that's a hard line to toe in some situations.
Well, this is a prime example of what just happened with the Los Angeles Clippers. This is why Ty Lue is the Clipper team, not just the front office, not just Steve Ballmer, not just Lawrence Frank wanted and Jerry West wanted Doc out, but the players wanted T. Lue. The players wanted T. Lue because he was young, he could relate to them, he know what's going on. They could have a better relationship and be able to coexist better. It's a way that behind the scenes, a younger coach could go to a player and talk to them and they could relate because of the culture status. This is why they was like, you know, maybe Doc is not that guy. He's a lot older. He can't relate to the new world of the NBA. So we want Ty Lue, and this is the same situation as what I'm talking about right now for the New Orleans Pelicans.
Brian,
and this is maybe why that some of the discussion over the last few days is his staff. Stan Van Gundy has a crew of guys he's worked with for a long time. David Griffin may want some guys on the staff who work together with those young players, Perk. Let's see who he hires for his staff.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's part of this, too. There's always that guy on the staff that relates to a particular player. I mean, look, we talk about LeBron a lot on these shows, and LeBron has had on every staff, right, that he's been, whether it was in Miami, it was Juwan Howard, right, in Cleveland, there was Damon Jones, there was James Posey. There were different guys that he could relate to. Ty was one of those guys when David Blatt was the coach. So I do think we need to see what the staff looks like. But, Brian, let me ask you this real quick before I move on to Perk, and I want to talk about the defense of this Pelicans team last season. In regards to Stan, you know, the last stint in Detroit, because he had so much on his plate, because he was also the president and making personnel decisions, how much better do you think Stan can be this go-around because he doesn't have that stuff on his plate?
The Orlando Magic got better when Stan became their coach. The Detroit Pistons got better when Stan became their coach. Not because of the moves he made with the front office, because their coach. I have no doubt that the New Orleans Pelicans will get better with Stan as their coach. Will he reach Zion? Will it be enough? That's what we're going to watch and find out.
Perk, defensively, they were ranked, I believe, 21st this season. Stan, as I alluded to earlier, is an excellent defensive coach. Historically, that's always been the case wherever he's been. What do you need to see from them defensively?
Well, first is the effort. And then second, they have to be healthy. You're looking at this Pelican team from this past season, they wasn't healthy majority of the season. But when you go back and look at the stint before Zion got there, right, you look at what the Pelicans were ranked. They were always top five defensively. They had a defensive-minded coach in Darren Erman, who was right under Alvin Gentry. But when you look at them, the first thing is that they have to be healthy. Zion has to get in better shape. I've been preaching this, that he has to drop 25 to 30 pounds and be able to move because the game is a lot faster. They own the ball. Defense has to get better, which I think if they decide to keep Drew Holiday, that Drew Holiday and Lonzo Ball have one of the best defensive backcourts in the league. And then you add a healthy Derek Favors to help anchor that defense at the five and protect the basket. Brandon Ingram, now he's got to take a step forward. Now he can't just go out there and get the 25 points a game. He has to take that step forward and being able to play both ends of the floor to keep improving and keep graduating and getting into that superstar status.
Yeah, those are all excellent points. It's funny because they did actually get better when Zion played in those 19 games. It wasn't so much about what Zion was doing on the defensive end. It was how he got to the basket, how he attacked the basket. He got the ball in the rim or in the hole and allowed the defense to actually get set on the other side as opposed to playing off misses, which is what they were doing a lot early in the season. But you mentioned their defense, particularly their backcourt. One of the big challenges that will be facing Stan Van Gundy and the Pelicans has to be the plan for Drew Holiday. He turned 30 this summer, and he'd be an attractive piece on any contender. But if the Pelicans plan to build around a 20-year-old Zion and a 23-year-old Brandon Ingram, you have to wonder, does Holiday fit into those long-term plans? Brian, what do you think about the Pelicans and what they can do with Drew Holiday?
This, if I was Stan Van Gundy, would have been the number one question I asked David Griffin. Drew Holiday is 1 year away from having the ability to opt out of his contract. J.J. Redick also 1 year left on his contract. Do they want to keep these veteran players and try to, you know, get back into the playoffs for next year? Or do they want to make a move with these guys when their value is high? Because if Drew Holiday went onto the board, I think that there would be a bidding war amongst multiple teams to get him. And that's a huge decision going forward. Drew Holiday just won the Teammate of the Year award. He plays at both ends of the court. He is not an easily replaceable player. But if he is going to go, you're going to maybe have to look at that. And David Griffin did take some calls with Drew Holiday back in February before the deadline, didn't get serious about it. They've had a long time to think and look about this. And that to me is one of the biggest questions in the league, that everyone is waiting for a sign what the Pelicans are going to do with this star player.
All right, let's make the case that he stays, right? That he's part of this roster moving forward. I'll start with you, Brian. This is a stacked Western Conference. Can Stan Van Gundy and this Pelicans team, with the ascension of Zion, with the ascension of Brandon Ingram, with the veteran guys they have in this roster, with the team they have in place, are they a playoff team in your estimation?
If Zion looks the way he looked in the bubble, which was slow and out of shape, whether it was an injury relation or not, they are not a playoff team. If Zion is the guy that we saw at Duke, anything is possible. I am as excited about Zion and his ability to transform a game as I have been about any player in this league in the last 15 years. So Zion is right now, no matter what the Pelicans are doing, this is a vital, vital offseason for Zion Williamson. He needs to be working every single day on his game and his health to make sure that whenever next season starts, he's a difference-making player. And I don't care if Rhett Auerbach comes back and coaches this team. It doesn't matter who the coach is, if Zion Williamson isn't playing at a high level.
Perk?
Well, I do think that they could slide in that seven or eight spot. With them being fully healthy, with Zion coming back, we know that this kid is box office. But we know they have a lot of depth. They have heart. They have J.J. Redick. They have Drew Holiday, Lonzo Ball. They have all these guys that are not afraid of the moment. And at one point in time, the Pelicans were playing right before the pandemic. They were playing some very inspiring basketball and matching up with the best of them. And when you look at the Western Conference, yes, I know Golden State is coming back. Obviously, Portland won't be an 8 seed next year. Denver Nuggets will be back stronger. The Utah Jazz will be back better. But when I'm looking at the Utah Jazz, I'm looking at this New Orleans Pelicans team. To me, they're in the same category. They're in the same boat. Both of these teams have great young talent. Zion is not your typical young star. He's very mature. But the thing is that he has to be healthy. He has to get in shape. If he's in shape and he's healthy, I strongly believe that the Pelicans could make the playoffs in the Western Conference.
It's going to be fun to see no matter what. Box office, as you said, Perk. All right, coming up next, what's the biggest obstacle facing new Clippers head coach Ty Lue? We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, here's a distant replay from this date in 2003 featuring our colleague Vince Carter.
I figured it would. That's a slam. Yeah. Sloppy pass. 12 first quarter points for Vince Carter. Scotty picks up his dribble. Goes Mason in the corner.
The Jump is brought to you by the rugged truck and SUV lineup from Honda.
The Big Ten season begins this weekend, and Saturday we'll have the oldest trophy in the game in college football history on the line with number 21 Minnesota hosting number 18 Michigan for the Little Brown Jug, 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on ABC and the ESPN app. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano, joined by Kendrick Perkins and Brian Windhorst. Earlier today, Ty Lue was introduced as the 26th head coach in Clippers franchise history. Lue, of course, had previously coached in Cleveland for four seasons, winning a championship in 2016, and spent last season as an assistant on Doc Rivers' staff. Ty Lue definitely has a championship resume, but why did he choose to take over the Clippers?
But I'm excited because the roster is unbelievable. And to have a chance and opportunity to coach a team like the Clippers, who I love their roster, I love the team. I love what they stand for as an organization. You know, getting Mr. Ballmer and him kind of just being genuine of the person that he is and taking care of everyone and making sure everybody's in a great place. That's the type of environment I want to be in. And that's the type of environment that you need to win the championship. Everyone has to be on the same page. Everyone has to be together, and it has to be a family. And when you start there, I think it's easy to build a championship team because everyone's invested, everyone's a part of it, everyone's happy to be here, and that's what I like. Well, actually, they chose me. You know, it feels good to be wanted. You know, I think winning the championship and going to three straight finals as a coach and sitting out, you know, last year and kind of collecting my thoughts and doing a lot of film work, looking at a lot of different teams play, a lot of coaches and what they were doing. And for me to be here, they chose me, and it feels good to be wanted.
I don't blame him. It always feels good to be wanted, right? So, Perk, Lue knows his way around a super team, obviously. So how does his promotion to head coach affect this Clippers squad going into next season?
Well, you know, Lue brings, he's a student of the game. He's a stud. He's a guy that doesn't show a lot of emotions on the sideline during the game. He live by that motto that practices are for coaches and games are for players. Now, with that being said, I'm going to get straight to it. The pressure is on for the Los Angeles Clippers. You heard Steve Ballmer at the start of the show. They have the best coach in the game of basketball, which I don't agree with. I believe that's Eric Spoelstra, but Ty Lue is a stud. The Clippers have zero excuses this year. It's championship or bust. Ty Lue just said that they have a talented roster. They have all the pieces, that they're a family. Well, they're going to have to show it this year, and the pressure is on him. The pressure is on the Clippers organization. The pressure is on the players, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Zero excuses. It's championship or bust.
Look, Perk played for Ty Lue in Cleveland. I covered that Cavs team on a daily basis for years with Ty Lue as a coach. We both know he is an excellent coach, but he's got a problem here. And that problem is there's a disconnect on that roster. And it's not clear where the disconnect is. Is it because they had injuries? Is it because there's an issue between the holdover players and the new players? Is it a matter of holding the star players to a certain level? Is it a matter of a mismatch on the roster? there was obviously something that went haywire, and Ty Lue is going to have to dig in, and he's got no excuse not to know because he was sitting there. He's going to have to dig in the next few months, identify the problem, and correct it, because this team, as Perk said, has no excuses. There is nothing on this team that isn't there to be a championship team, and Ty Lue's going to have to roll his sleeves up, and there will be no answer other than championship where this will be deemed a good job.
Perk, Brian brings up a good point, and we heard Ty mention that too in his press conference that we just rolled out, which is the togetherness aspect of this. How does he start building that camaraderie, that chemistry off the floor, which seemed to be an issue last season and affected their play on the court too?
Well, George, first of all, I've been preaching this. They don't have a leader. Kawhi Leonard is a great player, but he's not a leader. If I'm the Clippers, I am knocking at the door to start a free agency and trying to go get Rajon Rondo. That's who they need. They need a guy that's going to be able to hold them accountable on and off the court, a guy that's going to be able, that's going to preach sacrifice, that's going to lose himself in the team. They got to have a leader. They got to go out there and get a true point guard that's going to put these guys on the floor in position to be successful. They lack leadership skills. Look, we've been hearing so many whispers come from out of that Clip organization about Kawhi Leonard getting special treatment. Lou Will did what he did for us going to Magic City. When you're on a championship team, you don't have those type of problems. Yeah. We have never heard anything. The two teams that went to the finals this year, the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers, we didn't hear those type of problems coming out of the locker room. We didn't hear those type of whispers of LeBron James and Anthony Davis getting special treatment. We didn't hear about Jimmy Butler getting special treatment. No, you need leaders in that locker room. Miami had Udonis Haslam and Andre Iguodala. They had Jimmy Butler. The Los Angeles Lakers had multiple leaders, LeBron James, Rajon Rondo, Jared Dudley, JaVale McGee, and they were able to police themselves, and that's what the Clippers need.
Yeah, they definitely need some leadership. I think we all can agree on that, no doubt. All right, coming up next, speaking of leadership, the Rockets leader, their owner, Governor Tillman Fertitta, says that his team still plans to contend next season. We'll discuss that after the break. But first, here's what The Jump recommends for today. ESPN's NBA insiders held a free agency and trade debate. Most intriguing teams were included, the top targets, and of course, bold predictions. You got it all there. Really good stuff broken down extensively. So visit ESPN.com to check it out or go on the ESPN app. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment here on The Jump. Saturday, UFC 254 on Fight Island at a special early start time. Prelims start at noon Eastern on ESPN2, ESPN Plus, and ESPN Deportes, with the main card on pay-per-view at 2 Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Our main event is for the undisputed lightweight championship, Khabib and Gaethje. To order the main card in English or in Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano here with Kendrick Perkins and Brian Windhorst. Bradley Beal is a frequent target of trade speculation, including the Windhorst podcast, The Hoop Collective, this past week. I was listening to that. And of course, he was asked, Beal recently, what it would mean to play his entire career in Washington. Here's the quote from Bradley Beal. Quote, I'm a loyal guy. I want to be here. I'm here. I've signed my extension. And that will mean the world to me, being able to finish your career in one place. You know, you don't see that in today's game. That would definitely be an honor, but my ultimate goal is to win. A 27-year-old Beal is already the number two all-time leading scorer in Wizards history. Elvin Hayes is number one. He signed that extension before the season began and is under contract for at least two more seasons with a player option for 2022. Kendrick, are you buying that Beal wants to stay in D.C.? Are you taking him for his word?
I'm torn in between, to be honest, George. I could see, look, Bradley Beal is a wonderful human being, and he is a lawyer guy, come from a great family. But I'm also say this to Bradley Beal. He's given his all to that Wizard organization, even this past season. I mean, he left it all out on the table for them. And his time, he's entering his prime. I see him trying to run it back maybe one more year with a healthy John Wall. If that don't pan out, it's time for him to move on. He deserves better. He deserves to be on a better team that's going to contend for a title. So I understand the loyalty part, but he also have to realize that this is a business. Because guess what? When he can't contribute or the Wizards think that he's not getting it done, he will be on the first thing smoking. So to all the players, I will be careful how I use that loyalty word when it comes down to being loyal to franchises and make sure that you do the best thing for Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal is a smart guy. He has an excellent agent. He is veteran. This statement was perfectly framed. Yes, he's loyal. Yes, he wants to be there, but he wants to win. And so that's the big thing. Now, there are a bunch of teams in this league, George, who would kill to get their hands on Bradley Beal before the start of next season. My feel is that that is not happening. They're going to see how this season goes, both Bradley and the Wizards. But if this season doesn't go well, the clock is going to start ticking, and everybody knows that.
By the way, if you want to hear more about potential trade targets this offseason, the Hoop Collective podcast, as I mentioned earlier with Brian Windhorst, did a great job this week. Although, Brian, I do love the fact that you tried to start at the beginning of the podcast to say, aggregators, don't mount up. This isn't reporting. But yet, nonetheless, they still aggregated you anyway in your content.
That's just the way it works.
But anyway, download and subscribe to the Hoop Collective podcast. All right, let's talk about the Rockets next. Team owner Tillman Fertitta was on CNBC's Power Lunch and was asked about the direction of this team. Let's take a look.
What would you say to those folks who are speculating about what kind of changes could be coming?
Well, I mean, you have James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and yeah, do you have almost 90% of your salaries tied up in them and Eric Gordon? But anytime you have players like that, Eric, PJ, James and Russell, there's no reason to blow up your roster. And this is still our window. The next couple of years, James and Russell are in their early 30s, and we're not blowing up anything.
All right, so the Rockets won 44 games this past shortened season before bowing out to the Lakers in the conference semis in 5 games. The team is expensive, and they're not necessarily young either. So let's take a look at their cap situation here. Russ and James both making $40 million plus through 2023. So, Perk, we'll start with you. Is this the right move? Are they still contenders in the West?
They are. And look, we have to all remember, before the pandemic, the Rockets, when they made that trade and traded away Clint Capella, people were like, they were on to something. Russell Westbrook was having, in my opinion, the best season of his career. And I get it. He averaged a triple-double for 3 straight seasons and all that with Oklahoma. But when I look at this Russell Westbrook before the pandemic, he was efficient. He shot the highest field goal percentage he ever shot in his career, almost at 48%. He was dominating the paint. I had changed his name to Russell O'Neal. And when the pandemic hit, Russell Westbrook, when the restart of the bubble, he caught the coronavirus, so he didn't have as much time to prepare like everyone else, and he tore his quad muscle, so he wasn't healthy. That's a 6 to 8 week injury. I had that injury. He wasn't supposed to be playing. So I'm looking at it, and for once, the owner is right. You run it back. You still have 2 guys that are in their prime that were former MVPs that could get the job done. You do a little tweaking here and there to the roster, and you run it back, and you give yourself another opportunity.
So I really appreciate that Tillman Fertitta does these interviews on the record virtually every week. But in this particular case, he is saying something that everybody knows, because they don't really have an option to rebuild right now. They don't control their draft next year. And if you look at the way Daryl Morey structured the Russell Westbrook trade, the Thunder control the Rockets draft in 2021 and then from 2024 to 2026. So it looks like the plan for the Rockets is to contend the next 2 years with their 31-year-old stars and then begin the rebuild when they have control. It's very difficult, ask the Brooklyn Nets, to do a rebuild when you don't control your draft pick. And so that is probably the timeline that they're on. And even if he wanted to rebuild, as you just showed with that graphic, they have $120 million tied up in five players. And a couple of those guys, they couldn't trade for value if they wanted to. They have no choice but status quo.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the draft part of it is a huge part of this particular equation. All right, let's stick with the Rockets here. They're one of two teams in the NBA with a coaching vacancy at the moment. A lot of different names have been tossed around to fill that opening, but they're still taking their time. So, Brian, who are they looking at? And how soon do you think the Rockets need to actually hire someone?
Well, they're not under any sort of time pressure. They don't have a pick in this draft. It's not like he has to work draft workouts. When Daryl Morey decided to resign, there were candidates who decided they didn't want to be in the process anymore. And that's okay. But it narrowed their candidate pool. Many people in the league think that John Lucas, the longtime assistant there, who hasn't been a head coach in the league in 18 years, has a chance here. And part of that is his relationship with the players and his relationship with Raphael Stone, who was just named general manager. So while there are other candidates, including Stephen Silas, I would say today that my guess is it's going to be John Lucas.
What about Jeff Van Gundy there? I mean, we've heard his name been thrown about with the Clippers and the Rockets. Is that even a realistic possibility?
I think circumstances have changed.
Okay, fair enough. All right, coming up next, the Miami Heat were just two wins away from an NBA title. We'll leave that there. So what's the missing ingredient that could get them over the hump? We'll discuss that next here on The Jump.
Remember that National Vote Early Day is October 24th. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm George Sedano. We're less than 2 weeks away from the 2020 election. The NBA and its players have done unprecedented work this year to make voting accessible to as many people as possible. Check out all the ways the NBA is rocking the vote.
We have a developing story going on in the NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks are boycotting.
The past 4 months have shed a light on the ongoing racial injustices facing our African-American communities. Despite the overwhelming plea for change, there has been no action.
You want to talk about really provoking change? This is an appropriate way to go about it. You haven't seen anything like this in a modern era.
After all the work to get to the bubble, the NBA world came to a screeching halt after the Bucks walked out of a playoff game. It sparked a small revolution. Other major sports followed.
This isn't just about basketball. We aren't just basketball players.
The athletes returned to the courts and fields came with a more focused mission.
We encourage all citizens to educate themselves and remember to vote on November 3rd.
A call to action.
There's so many things that we need to change. For me, if there was one, it's voting.
In order to resume the season, players wanted their teams to take action and help provide additional voting access, resulting in 21 NBA owners agreeing to work with election officials to convert their arenas and practice facilities into polling places for the 2020 election.
The reason that it's important is because it's fixing a need. Around the nation, you can see more and more polling locations closing. There's some places that have one polling location. How?
To sit with a call with our owners and for them to hear how important some of these initiatives are.
To know that Staples Center is going to be a polling site for voting is unbelievable.
LeBron James announced he was starting More Than a Vote back in June, a push to fight black voter suppression with the help of other athletes and entertainers. Now with the league behind the effort to raise awareness, there was suddenly large signage at games, public service announcements.
My vote is my right.
Yes, everyone has an equal vote, but not everyone has equal access to voting.
And warm-up shirts with a new message.
Vote.
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 With the NBA and WNBA being predominantly black, educating the community on how every vote matters has been at the forefront of the movement to promote increased voter turnout in both local and national elections.
I have had generations of African-Americans, especially my grandparents, that have marched and have fought for the right to vote.
We slept with our heads in the mud every day trying for justice. People got killed. So how can you not exercise it? Regardless what you think, you can go in there and cast your ballot.
Black kids and black people in the community don't believe that their vote matters. My goal is to change that.
Voter suppression is real, because if you feel like that, a few of your homies might feel like that. So then that's 20 of y'all that feel like that. And then if they spread that same feeling to their family members, that's a few hundred.
100 million people did not vote in 2016, and one out of every five people that are eligible to vote, you know, aren't registered.
Everyone's vote does matter. And if you believe that it doesn't, that's probably because you've been led to believe that way. It's in some people's best interest for you not to vote.
I think we've all had our reasons of why we haven't gone out to the polls, but right now, you know, our lives are on the line, and it's more important than ever.
Now, we need to care about who represents us. The people decide who gets charged with what crimes, and judge our sentences are all elected officials.
Everybody looks kind of at the top level when you can affect change at the smaller levels within our communities.
Picking who's in that position to be able to make decisions on the future of whether it's through health, whether it's education, it's important that people understand voting is important.
We've got a lot of problems. With all those things to fix, I don't think we can fix any of them unless we do this. No vote, no country.
This really might be the most important election ever, because a lot of people are banking on democracy. You know, a lot of people are banking on not the divided states of America. We're counting on the United States of America. That just means that we're counting on people to have their voices heard on November 3rd.
Thanks to Mark Spears for voicing that, and of course, the NBA family for their tireless work and efforts. Coming up next, the Miami Heat were just two wins away from an NBA title. So what's the missing ingredient that could get them over the hump? We'll discuss next here on The Jump. It's crunch time here on The Jump. On this date yesterday, in 2018, Rajon Rondo allegedly spit on Chris Paul, and things obviously escalated from there. Perk, can you believe this was 2 years ago already?
I can't believe it, but I could believe that it happened. These guys been beefing their whole career. They both wanted to smoke. It was, look, it's been cloudy outside, George. We were just waiting on a thunderstorm.
Hey, people were actually on LeBron for paying too much attention to Chris Paul instead of his own teammate. Now he and Rondo have rings.
I know. It's wild. And he was one of the guys he embraced first, actually, when he won that ring, and the longest embrace there, if we're judging those things. Not that we should be. But anyway, let's move on. Duncan Robinson, speaking of the Lakers and that series, revealed on the Titus and Tate podcast that the Lakers bench was yelling Jimmy Neutron at him. Perk, do you think that D-Rob looks like Jimmy Neutron? I can see it. I think the Lakers were onto something.
Yeah. Yes, he do.
Listen to Perk. Is this even an insult? I mean, it's being compared to like a cartoon hero. I'd like to be compared to Jimmy Neutron.
I love it. I do think he looks like Jimmy Neutron a little bit. I think he should roll with that. I think that should be his new nickname. Duncan Neutron Robinson. Just roll
Perk
with it.
Perk loves it. Perk loves it.
All right, let's stick with the Heat here. Brian, this team obviously came really close to winning it all this past season. They were within two games. So what do you think they need to get over the hump as we look at this upcoming season?
Well, I think what they would say, George, if Eric Spoelstra is here, is they need health. They would gladly take the finals over tomorrow with a healthy Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo. They don't really think they need anything. Now, look, they have grand plans to chase guys like Giannis Antetokounmpo in free agency, and so I have to acknowledge that. But in the short run, I think they could maybe do better with a more athletic starting small forward. Now, I don't want to disparage Duncan after we've just called him Jimmy Neutron, but he's a bit more of a specialist. Now, he may prove me wrong. He may develop, but he was attacked often on defense, and the Heat had to go zone because teams were attacking Duncan Robinson. They may do better if he was more of a specialist off the bench long term, but we'll see.
Perk, you used to call them, or you called them during this run, the quote, goons from the 305. So what do the goons from the 305 need?
They don't need anything. I strongly believe that the Miami Heat could run it back. When you look at this team, we finally could put the super in front of the star when we talk about Jimmy Butler. What he did in the NBA Finals was phenomenal. We looking at Bam out of the Bayou. I said that he's a top three big in this league, and I'm going to stand by that. He was injured in the finals, and he wasn't 100%, so we didn't see the best Bam, but he was still productive. And then you look at Tyler Hero. This kid is a stud in the making. I believe that he will make the All-Star team next year. So I'm looking at this Heat roster, the sky's the limit. Goran Dragic went out during the finals, a guy who was playing phenomenal throughout the playoffs, averaging close to 21 points a game, 50% from the field, 40 from the three. I'm not changing anything if I'm the Miami Heat. I think they're just fine where they're at. They got the best coach in today's game in Eric Spoelstra, and they're going to be perfectly fine. And I strongly believe that the Heat could run it back and make it to the finals again next season.
The East is going to be really fun. The top of that East is going to be really, really competitive. So much stuff certainly there, and so many teams that are going to be in the mix, including the Miami Heat, as long as they're healthy. So, look, at the top of the show, we gave you the breaking news that the Pelicans hired Stan Van Gundy to be their next head coach. Before we go, Perk, did they get the hire right?
Oh, look, I love Stan Van Gundy, but, I got to shoot it straight from the hip. And, no, I don't believe that they got the hire right. I'm going to stand by it. I thought they should have hired a guy like Jason Kidd or Mark Jackson, and that's just my opinion. I strongly believe that they didn't make the right hire.
So,
you know, George, this was such a difficult hire to make, and I think that's what you have to realize. You have to look at the hand that David Griffin was holding, and you have to realize that the level of coaches out there, you know, there just wasn't a lot that fit this bill. I know Perk disagrees with me here, but I think it was a hard hire to make, and I think they hired a guy who they think is going to be successful.
Yeah, look, I'm a fan of Stan. I think as far as his coaching acumen is concerned, I think that he's one of the better coaches we have in this league, and I think that he's going to get that chance to prove that again. You know, it's been a long time since that Orlando team went to the finals, but not long enough where I forgot how good a coach he was. And here's what Stan had to say about the news on Twitter. I'm excited to join a talented New Orleans Pelicans team. It will be my honor to work with our players and to work for Mrs. Benson and David Griffin, Trajan Langdon and their staff, and the great people of New Orleans. I can't wait to talk to our players and get the process started. Now, it's interesting, Brian and Perk, because you know, people forget that Orlando team, they were one of the first spread-the-floor teams, kind of four out with Dwight Howard. Now everybody plays five out, it seems like. But, Brian, this is someone who was certainly innovative for his time.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I think that this means J.J. Redick is probably not getting traded because he has such a connection there. It's one of the reasons why Redick thrived when he played for Stan in Orlando. But this team's got some big decisions to make. They're obviously going to re-sign Brandon Ingram, but they have to decide whether Lonzo Ball is worth extending as their franchise point guard. They have to decide what to do with Derek Favors as a free agent. And we talked about Drew Holiday already. There's a lot of heavy lifting for David Griffin and Stan Van Gundy heading forward here.
Well, this is how I feel about it. I strongly believe that hopefully that Stan Van Gundy has had a chance to look himself in the mirror and say, I have to adjust. We watched the great Greg Popovich say, I have to adjust. This is not the old days. So hopefully, you know, with his time away from the game, he's going to come in with a different mindset, a different attitude, and know that this is not back in the day. This is a new generation. These young players are different than what they were 5-10 years ago.
Yep.
And hopefully that he goes in with a different attitude and a different mindset.
He's very progressive. So thanks to Perk. Thanks to Wendy. We'll talk to you tomorrow on The Jump. See ya.